acceleration tool. The bottom of a clean is a pull, and the top of the clean is a throw. Back strength makes this possible and is why the deadlift is important to train for heavy cleans. The wrench analogy was used to illustrate the concept of moment force, with the bar on the shoulders being the force that turns the bolt, the back being the wrench handle, and the hips being the bolt. But in this specific application, the force gets directed from the hips to the bar, and the moment arm is the tool used to command the bar to move faster with the force generated by the muscles that open the hip angle. When we squat down, the muscles of the hips and back are used to resist the rotation that could be produced by the loaded bar on the way down. But when we pull up fast, we are using the muscles of the hips and back to produce the rotation along the back that is required to accelerate the bar upward. Remember that the human hip is a class 1 lever. The back and the pelvis form the rigid segment. The hip joints are the fulcrums. The hamstrings, glutes, and adductors of the posterior chain are the force pulling down behind the hips, and the load in your hands is the force pulling down in front of the hips. Because our muscles can only contract a small percentage of their length, our skeletal levers must multiply this distance of contraction if we're going to move anything efficiently. This amplification of muscle contractile distance comes at the expense of greater force production. If you're strong enough that the force generated by the posterior chain is high enough, the short segment behind the hip joint, the ischium of the pelvis, can lever up the long segment, and the length of the back multiplies the velocity of the hip rotation. The short side moving a short distance with enough force can make the long side accelerate its load over a long distance. This acceleration starts during the middle of the pull as the bar approaches the knees, when the back angle changes to make the moment arm between the bar and the hips a much shorter. This change in angle whips the back through perhaps 60 degrees of angle in a fraction of a second, making the bar accelerate along with it. As the angle of the back becomes more vertical, faster, the angular velocity, the rate at which the angle described by the plane of the back changes around the axis of the hips, increases. As this occurs, the linear velocity of the bar hanging from the arms increases as well. The bar hanging at the end of the arms increases its velocity with the angular acceleration of the back angle, just like the ball thrown from the forearm whipping through the angle it makes when the upper arm accelerates into internal rotation. A looping bar path would take further advantage of this phenomenon as the bar whipped away from the body. Indeed, this is one of the reasons that a lifter might decide to loop the bar. The speed of the bar increases if it is allowed to follow the arc of the changing angle. Some loop is unavoidable, as we already observed, but the bar has to be kept close to the body in a vertical bar path as vertical as possible, or inefficient horizontal motion is introduced into the pull. We do this with the lats by changing the arm angle to maintain the vertical bar path, keeping the bar close to the body even as the back whips through its angle to become more upright into the jump. If the lats fail to do their job of keeping the bar close, the lifter has to lay back with the upper body to counter the forward horizontal bar travel. Pulling is vertical. Swinging is horizontal. And it is here that the analogy to the jump we have used to facilitate learning the clean actually breaks down. The whip through the middle of the pull, using the moment arm along the back, is what actually starts the acceleration of the load. And this occurs well below the knees, not at the top, as in a vertical jump for height. The knees rebend as the bar passes them to allow the quadriceps to extend the knees a second time. But this occurs during the process of building velocity from the acceleration, which started lower in the pull. Velocity builds during the whole acceleration phase, from the floor to the top of the pull, not just at the top of the pull. But during this shift from hips to knees, it is typical that the increase in velocity slows, giving many people the impression that the only fast part of the pull is at the top. The drop in bar velocity due to a reduction in acceleration is due to the sudden reduction in work being done on the bar as the shift occurs. For a brief instant, to acquire a better position to continue the pull, you're moving your body instead of the bar. As the hip angle opens, the hip extensor's ability to accelerate the load along both the back and the thigh diminishes as the moment arm from the hip shortens. The hips lose their ability to effectively operate the tool we're using to accelerate the bar as the back becomes more vertical and the moment arm goes away. And to continue to increase the bar velocity, we have to reconfigure the levers. The knees rebend and create leverage against the bar from the knee backwards, now powered by the quadriceps and adding to the velocity acquired during the middle of the pull. This second pull makes use of the fact that the moment arm along the femurs can be operated by both the knee and the hip extensors. So in some sense, it is still a jump. Jumping keeps the bar from swinging into a loop. The deadlift, by the way, does not make use of this shift in leverage because the slow velocity at which a deadlift is pulled will not allow a further loss of bar speed without actually stopping the pull and creating what is called a hitch, supporting the bar on the thighs as the velocity of the bar up goes to zero. If this rebend is excessive, as it will be if you try to stand up too vertically too soon, it will greatly reduce your ability to use the angular acceleration of the back through the middle of the pull. Excessive knee flexion slacks the hamstrings distally, removing much of their contractile potential from the pull and removing the posterior chain from the most critical part of the pull. A deliberate attempt to shorten the moment arm between the bar and the hips by coming into a vertical position before acceleration reveals a misunderstanding of the leverage system being used in the clean. Acceleration is not necessary for a deadlift, but it is the absolute essence of a clean. An earlier, more vertical back angle is fine for a deadlift, but it reduces acceleration for a clean. By keeping your shoulders out over the bar, you enable your back to whip the load up quickly. So the acceleration of the pull actually starts before the place we earlier identified as the jumping position. As the back loses its horizontal angle and becomes vertical, the knees shift into position to continue the acceleration of the bar through to the top of the pull. This is why you can clean more from the floor than you can from the hang position, if your pull is correct. So there are actually two periods of acceleration during the clean pull. The first through the middle of the pull as the back angle whips from more horizontal to more vertical, and the second after the knees rebend to allow the knee extensors to add to the bar velocity. Graphs of bar acceleration show this phenomenon quite clearly. If the first phase is performed correctly, there will be little loss of velocity as the second phase begins. This entails the proper understanding of the acceleration function of the first part of the pull. The bar needs to be in contact with your legs during this phase, touching the skin all the way up as you maintain straight elbows. The path is vertical because the knees and hips extend in a coordinated way that results in the loads moving up in a straight line, with as little forward or backward deviation, as seen in horizontal movement in the bar path, as possible. During this section of the pull, forward movement of the bar is usually due to an incorrect start, as previously discussed. Starting errors are magnified as the bar goes up. If the bar feels like it is too far forward, if it is not touching your thighs all the way up, check your starting position again. Your hips may be too low. The bar may be too far forward. Or you may need to think about using your lats to actively push the bar back into your legs on the way up. One way to ensure that the middle of the pull is finished correctly every time is to establish a marker for its successful execution. If you actively try to touch the same place high on your thighs with the bar each rep and develop the ability to feel the contact point between bar and thigh and control it, you will gain a large measure of conscious control over the finish of the power clean. Bar contact on the thighs is necessary for correctly meeting the jumping position, and if you use that contact as a cue, you're much more likely to perform the first part of the pull correctly. Using this bar contact as a cue can also increase the speed of the clean because the bar will be hitting the thighs harder, and you will be using more extension power to cause that contact. You can also use this contact as a diagnostic tool, clothing permitting, by looking at your thighs to see where the red mark from the bar contact is on the skin. You can identify pulling errors by seeing where the mark is on the thighs in relation to where it should be for the most efficient finish. At the top, after the bar has been pulled up past the knees from the correct starting position, it should assume an essentially vertical path until it reaches the jumping position. Prior to this phase, the bar must remain over the midfoot for the most efficient power production to occur. As your back finishes the whip through the pull and moves behind the vertical, your upper body mass moving back will react against the mass of the bar, one of the throw aspects of the clean. And as you jump and your feet break contact with the floor so you can drop under the bar for the rack, force stops being applied to the bar. As a result, the bar path will usually deviate from vertical at this point. This is unavoidable, and as long as the deviation is not excessive, it will not be a problem. If it is excessive, more than a couple of inches, then something happened on the way up that caused the deviation. Usually the bar pulled from a forward position off the floor. All cleans and snatches involve the shrugging of the shoulders, as video analysis will show. The shrug is a concentric trapezius contraction that protects the bony anatomy of the shoulders during the upward explosion and adds force to the pull at the top. The scapulas are suspended from the spine by the traps and related musculature. They hang from the muscles of the upper back, and their only bony attachment is at the arms and collarbones on the distal end of the assembly. If you didn't shrug as you jumped up with the heavy bar in your hands, your scapulas would be explosively slammed down onto your rib cage by the upward force of the spine in the jump. The traps contraction is an involuntary reflex. It occurs as a consequence of having the bar in your hands as you jump. And this is why we don't need to talk about it during the early part of learning the clean. But later, after the weight gets heavier as you begin to learn the clean correctly, the shrug becomes an important cue for completing the upward explosion against the load. The shrug occurs as you jump with a slightly backwards-directed movement. Shrugging on a bar in front of you has to be a little backwards-directed so that the shrug does not pull your body forward. This keeps the system's center of mass over the midfoot during the last part of the pull. Because the hips have extended very hard and pushed the bar slightly away, and because the elbows must rotate under the bar for you to rack it on your shoulders, the bar path at this point may deviate forward a little from the vertical as previously noted. The point immediately before this deviation is actually where peak velocity is produced. This deviation is a technique issue if it occurs before the jump. in which case it adversely affects power production. As the bar comes up high enough that your elbows must unlock, they begin to rotate up into the rack position forward. The clean is finished as the elbows complete their rotation by coming to a position pointing forward. During this rotation, the elbows never rise above the level of the shoulders. In fact, they never even approach the level of the shoulders until the bar is racked. After you have stopped applying force to the bar, at the end of the jump, your elbows unlock and rise a short distance to the point where they're in flexion, and then they start forward into the rack. The elbows bend only after the force generated against the floor stops. The bar stops coming up, and you start going down to catch the bar. Nothing slows a clean down more than an attempt to row the elbows up high and lift the bar with the arms. There is a bodybuilding exercise known as the upright row, in which the bar is raised to the chin with a narrow double overhand grip. Most people have embedded deep in their little brains a bundle of material that tells them that all things must be lifted with the arms, especially if these things are going to be lifted above the waist. And embedded in your mind is a picture of a bodybuilder doing an upright row. It's a slow movement that uses the arms and deltoids not particularly efficiently. And though it bears a superficial resemblance to the clean, it has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with our explosive power clean. After the bar leaves the jumping position, no thought whatsoever should be given to the arms. None. The clean is a jump with the bar in the hands, after which the shoulders are slammed forward to catch the bar. It should be as though there is no elbow activity at all during this phase. The bar rises up in response to the jump, and then the elbows jam forward and the shoulders jam into the bar. After the bar leaves the jumping position, it must stay close to the chest so that it doesn't have to travel very far back to get in the rack position. If the bar heads away from the body between the jump and the rack, in the trajectory that is referred to as a loop, the distance between the bar and the shoulders has to be closed back up. You'll have to do this either by pulling the bar back into the shoulders, which is possible with light weights, but not very possible with heavy weights at all, or more likely, you'll have to jump forward to meet the bar. Neither of these motions is efficient. Any motion of the body that directs the bar anywhere other than straight up to the shoulders reflects a lack of efficiency. You correct the loop by first determining why the bar is going forward. If the jump starts early, that is, if you hit the jumping position too low on the thighs or even lower at the knees, then a bar will loop forward due to a back angle that is not vertical enough. If the bar is going to go straight up, your back must be vertical enough that most of the hip extension is already over before you jump. Otherwise, the remaining hip extension will swing the bar away into a loop. You determine this fault by observing where on the thighs the bar is when the jump occurs. Immediately after the clean, pull your sweats down, privately, and look for the faint red line on the thighs where the bar just touched. The line will be visible for several seconds after the contact. Or you can chalk the bar to make this mark more visible on your sweats. If you have a jumping position that starts consistently too low on the thighs, think about waiting longer or touching higher, however you'd prefer to think about it, before you jump. If the loop occurs because you're too forward on your toes during the lower pull off the floor, your heels will be soft against the floor and your knees will be forward as the bar passes them. In this case, the bar loops because it is headed forward from the ground up, as the bar path will show on your video or to your coach. Get back off of your toes and onto the midfoot to start the pull. And make sure you keep the heels down until you jump with the bar well up on the thighs. Pulling the bar up off of the floor around your knees indicates that you have started the pull by opening the hip angle instead of by opening the knee angle. This is a bad error and it must be corrected immediately. If you somehow manage to loop the bar from the correct jumping position, you may be banging it away from you off of the thighs where you touch the jumping position. This rather uncommon problem is caused by not jumping up enough, the movement that makes the bar climb straight up the body. This error would occur as a result of an incorrect understanding of the movement. The perception that the clean swings into position on the shoulders, propelled by a bounce off the thighs. Our teaching method for the power clean makes a mistake like this almost impossible, but bad habits imported from previous instruction are often in evidence. The emphasis on the jump and the correct use of the arms keeps the body close to the bar on the way up through the top part of the pull. You can think about shrugging the bar at this point if you need to, or you can make the bar touch your shirt on the way up. Keep the bar close enough to you that you feel it on the way up as it passes your chest, and you will have shrugged it in as vertical a line as possible. Actually, if you try to touch your shirt on the way up, this will usually correct the errors made at the bottom. This is an excellent example of a phenomenon called correction displacement, in which sufficient attention focused on correcting an error later in a sequence of movements unconsciously causes the correction of the initial problem earlier in the sequence. If you manage to touch your shirt with the bar before you rack it, you will have to get back into your midfoot to do that, since the shirt is more back toward the heels than forward toward the toe. This correction displacement trick comes in handy many times in the weight room and throughout athletics. A finished pull is characterized by a position common to both the clean and the snatch. The hips and knees are in full extension. The feet are in plantar flexion, which would be up on the toes. The traps have pulled the shoulders up into a shrug. The head's in a normal position relative to the neck, with the chin perhaps slightly up, but the neck not in overextension. The elbows are not yet unlocked. Straight elbows, and there is a slight backward lean. This position will be attained if all the power of the hip and knee extension has been milked out of the pull. It is common to fail to fully extend the hips and knees, leaving untapped the last 10% of the extension at the end of the range of motion. The cue to finish the pull echoes through training halls all over the world as coaches encourage their athletes to get all possible power out of the entire range of motion. Despite the fact that the fully extended top position has the lifter up on his toes, active ankle extension, plantar flexion, is not really a huge contributor to the explosion. The calf muscles do contract and produce some force, but the momentum of the knee and hip extension is what actually carries you up onto your toes at the top of the pull. Some coaches have had success with adding some calf raises into the program, and this may work by making the lifter aware of this component of the finished position. A cue like toes may be a useful reminder to finish at the top by making you aware of the completed finished position. But an active attempt to perform a hard plantar flexion, a calf raise, at the end of a clean will not add much to most people's pull. As noted before, power production stops when the feet break contact with the floor. And this occurs as the process of catching the bar in the rack position begins. As soon as the feet move out of the pulling stance, you have stopped pushing the floor. If you hadn't, your feet couldn't move. The full extension of the knees and hips is the last piece of the act of pulling the bar, and after this final position is attained, the process is over. even if heavy weights could be rowed by the arms after the pull, and they can't. The result of the drop in pulling force would result in a drop in bar speed. The reality is that the upward momentum of the bar quite rapidly approaches zero, at which point the bar will begin to fall back down. You have to catch it in the rack position before this happens, so you'd better hurry. The faster your feet move from the stance used for pulling into the squat stance used for catching, the less time the bar has to decelerate. It is natural to move the feet from the pulling stance width to a position approximately equal to the width used in the squat. This will happen naturally without your having to think about it, like several other things we have discussed. It's an artifact of having jumped, of the feet having actually broken contact with the ground and landed. The feet move laterally outward a little so that the knees and the hips can absorb the shock of the landing. This lateral movement is reflexive and useful. Jumping forward is not. Usually caused by a bar path error, jumping forward wastes time and energy that could be more efficiently used to make the bar travel upward. Jumping to an excessive width is also unproductive. Excessive width takes excessive time to cover, which means that time better spent finishing the pull was used to perform the excessive lateral split. The rack position. After the elbows rotate up and jam into position, pointing forward, the bar is said to be in the rack position, or to be racked. The upward rotation of the elbows causes the deltoids to come up into a contracted position that raises them higher than the sternum, permitting the bar to sit comfortably clear of that bone. At this point, most lifters will have relaxed the grip somewhat, and some will have released the hook. It's okay to release the hook, or even to let the last two fingers drop off the bar if it facilitates a good rack position. It is not okay to completely let go of the bar, although this does occasionally occur with some very inflexible lifters. The most important factor in the rack position is the elbow position and its effect on the deltoids, making a place for the bar to sit. This is actually the position of the bar for a correct front squat. The correct rack position is the one that allows the weight to be supported on the deltoids. In the correct position, the bar sits on the contracted deltoid muscle bellies. The delts hold the elbows up, keeping the weight off the sternum and the clavicles. The rib cage is held up by tension in the upper back musculature. The shoulders are elevated by the traps, and the entire trunk is held rigid in isometric contraction and further supported by the Valsalva maneuver. In this position, you can easily support as much weight as you can clean. When you rack the bar, the best position for the forearms relative to the upper arms is one where the humerus is externally rotated. This means that the forearm is really beside the humerus as opposed to stacked on top of it. It's helpful to think about lifting the elbows up and in toward the middle. In this position, the bar is lying on more muscle mass, and the elbows can finish their rotation in a higher position than they can if the bones of the forearm and humerus are merely stacked on top of each other. This external rotation upon racking the bar proceeds from the internally rotated position of the elbows that you use to reinforce the straight elbow position when learning the clean. The process of externally rotating the arms happens in the transition from the jump to the rack and adds to the snap that the movement should display. Many people will catch the bar with their elbows pointing at the floor. This error is due to a misunderstanding of the concept of the rack position, a lack of flexibility, or a grip that is too narrow for the length of the forearms. A sufficiently flexible trainee using a grip suitable for his anthropometry should be physically able to get his elbows into the correct position, although he may be reluctant to do so for various reasons. If you rack the bar incorrectly a few times and feel it bump your sternum because your elbows were down and the deltoids were not up high enough, you can become gun-shy and try to hold the bar up with your hands, which exacerbates the problem. Hitting yourself in the sternum is painful. Try not to start doing that. Rack the bar once and then move your elbows up into position, very high, so that the bar comes up off of the sternum. In this way, you can feel where your elbows should be. If you can't do this, you need to stretch or adjust your grip to a width that facilitates the position. Many times, a lack of wrist and tricep flexibility prevents the quick, complete rotation needed to rack the bar. Wrist flexibility is probably the more obvious of the two, but tight triceps may also prevent the elbows from coming up high enough to permit a good deltoid contraction. To extend your range of motion, you can stretch your wrists and triceps using the bar or a stick in the rack trapped under the hooks. Lift your elbows up one at a time, stretching the whole process up on either side by themselves and then together. If your flexibility is not sufficient to permit the full rotation of the elbows into a good rack, the fingers under the bar are the expendable part of the chain. After the pull is stopped, their function as the last element of force transfer to the bar is actually over. This concept is sometimes the source of confusion. The hands do not hold up the bar. They stop being critical to the clean after the elbow rotation starts. So the fingers can do what they want to as you rack the bar. They can hang on, or they can release to the extent that only the index, middle, and ring fingers are in contact with the bar. If your flexibility is sufficient, but you still cannot rack the bar quickly, you might just be reluctant to let go of the bar enough to permit the elbows to come up fast. All you need is a little relaxation of the hands and a willingness to quickly rotate all the way up into position a couple of times to see how it feels to do it right. Several mental tricks can help with racking speed. Imagine slamming your elbows up into the hands of your coach held in position. Sometimes it helps to aim your shoulders at the bar or to hit the bar with your shoulders like you're trying to strike a blow even as the elbows come up. The crucial concept here is that the bar is not racked until the elbows are up high enough to support the deltoids, and stopping the elbow rotation before it reaches this position is not a good rack. At the same time the bar racks, the feet stomp the floor. Since the feet must break contact with the floor if a jump has occurred, they must set back down on the floor, and thinking about stomping is a way to make this happen explosively, like everything about the top of the clean needs to be. This foot movement causes everything happening simultaneously with it to synchronize better. It feels better when the feet stomp and the bar racks at exactly the same time, and your body will time the rack to coincide with the stomp. And if the stomp is fast, it pulls the rack along faster with it. The simultaneity of the two events is fairly automatic, and not too many people will stomp out of phase with the rack because it just feels too weird. So the stomp actually sharpens the timing of the racking movement. A certain amount of knee bend, necessary of course to cushion the catching of the weight, will accompany the stomp. Catching the weight with perfectly straight knees is not desirable and doesn't occur very often with heavy weights since it also feels too weird. The stomp thus makes the movement faster while cushioning the catch with a bent knee. The feet will stomp into position that's approximately the same as the squat stance, as mentioned earlier. In practice, this should mean a couple of inches per side wider. Some people will shift their feet out to a position wider and perhaps much wider than a squat stance. This is an attempt to drop lower under the bar in lieu of pulling it high enough. You don't get a good stomp going this wide because the angle is not conducive to stomping, and the distance covered is so great that it takes too long. Stomping is quick. Lateral splitting is not. Correct this error by stomping into your correct starting position footprints several times without the bar, just with your hands on your hips. And then focus on this foot position during the clean with a lighter weight so you can rack it properly. Stubborn cases may have to actually attempt to stomp into their pulling stance footprints or even narrower in order to get enough correction to eliminate a wide lateral split. A lateral split is a bad thing to choose as a habit. It's dangerous, it's hard to control, and it's ineffective. The purpose of the power clean is to pull the bar as fast and as high as possible. We don't want to make it easier to get under the bar. We want to pull the bar higher. And if we're going to make it easier to get under the bar, we would just use a squat clean or the split version of the clean, not some weird bastardized mutation of the two or three. Another stomping error involves pulling the heels up very high in the back and slamming them back into the platform, as if to merely make some noise. From the side, it looks like a knee flexion, certainly not an efficient part of a well-finished pull. This is called a donkey kick, and it takes so much time to perform at exactly the wrong time that it can ruin the last 10 to 20% of the pull. Anything that takes away from pulling the bar as high as possible diminishes the ability to clean heavy weights. The donkey kick is a misinterpretation of what the feet do at the end of the pull. It will not be a problem for you if you learned the clean using our method. It is corrected by a conscious focus on finishing high on the toes. After you rack the bar, recover into a fully upright stance with your elbows still in the rack position. Don't develop the habit of putting the bar down before you have fully recovered and you have established control of the bar in the final position at the top. If you're in a big hurry to put the bar down after you rack it, you might soon find that you've gotten in a big hurry to rack it and start racking it wrong. Disaster follows closely on the heels of such things. Finish each clean correctly and completely. Power cleans are not like squats or deadlifts. Movements that can be ground out to a bone-on-bone finish through perseverance and hard work. Even if a deadlift is a little out of position, you can lock it out by just pulling harder if you're strong enough to do that. The movement is slower, and there is time to fix minor form problems before the pull is over. The clean takes about a second to do, and if it is not right, it doesn't rack. Cleans can be racked only if all the contributing factors are there: strength, power, and technique. Since the clean is a much more mechanically complicated movement, it is more sensitive to each contributing factor than the slower movements are. This fact is evidenced by the experience common to all lifters who find that 100 kilos is good for many attempts, but 105 just will not rack. Finishing the pull collates all the factors involved in the pull and causes them all to come together at the right time to contribute to racking the weight. The slow movements rely on absolute strength, the simple ability to generate force in the correct position without respect to time at their limit capacity, while the quick lifts utilize the ability to apply maximum power at exactly the right time, in exactly the right place. These are two distinct skills, producing different types of training stress and resulting in two different types of adaptation. Recognizing this difference between the slow lifts and the explosive lifts is fundamental to your understanding of barbell training. After the rack. After the clean is racked and recovered, the bar must be dropped safely without destroying you or your equipment. The method used here will depend on the equipment. If a platform and bumper plates are available, as they should be, The bar can be dropped from the rack position in a controlled manner. Care should be taken to prevent the bar from bouncing away from where it is dropped. You do this by keeping the bar level on the way down. While the bar is dropping, your hands should not leave it until just before it gets to the floor. Bars that are released at the top and allowed to free fall are much more likely to bounce unevenly than bars that are tended to as they drop. Free-falling bars are also much more likely to get bent by the whip that occurs as the bar contacts the floor unevenly and the shear force of the deceleration propagates down the length of the shaft due to the plates hitting the ground at different times. Even an expensive bar can be warped this way. If bumper plates are not available, the task becomes harder. The bar must be released from the rack and caught at the hang, and then lowered to the floor to prevent damage to the barbell and the floor. And this is actually the way all cleans and snatches were dropped before bumper plates were widely available. So, believe it or not, it can be done. But it can be tricky since it really hurts to actually drop the bar right on the thighs. You have to release the bar, but retain enough grip on it so as to be able to slow it down before it hits your thighs. It's decelerated with the traps, using a movement that's the opposite of the shrug used during the jump. The bar needs to stop here under control before being lowered on down to the floor. And if metal plates are used, it would be prudent to use rubber mats to protect the floor. But really, get some bumper plates. They're important enough to consider necessary if you're going to do the clean. The power snatch. Although it has the reputation for great technical complexity and for being difficult to both learn and coach, the power snatch is not any more complicated than the power clean. The power snatch also is a jump with the barbell in the hands and a catch in a rack position. It's just that the rack position is overhead in the hands, balanced directly above the shoulder joints instead of on the shoulders. The power snatch also obeys the laws of balance, force transfer, and leverage. It has a longer range of motion than the power clean and a longer distance to travel after the force stops being applied to the bar. So it has to be done with both lighter weight and more speed through the jump. But it can often be done by people who cannot rack a clean for various reasons, and the lighter weights are used to make it a viable option for some training programs. Don't be afraid of the power snatch. It's just not that big a deal to learn, and it's useful enough that all lifters should know how to do it. The most noticeable feature of the power snatch is the grip. It is wide, sometimes, for some tall, long-arm people, as wide as the bar permits, hands sleeve to sleeve. The width is needed to reduce the bar path's distance. Just as in the clean, the application of force to the bar stops after the feet break contact with the ground, and since the bar has to fly up under the momentum imparted to it, before the loss of foot contact, it would be best if the distance the bar had to travel unpowered could be reduced. The wide grip allows a savings of 5 to 6 inches over the distance of the pull, although it alters the start position on the ground. A wide grip produces the functional equivalent of short arms, making the lifter's back angle more horizontal in the start position and in the rack position. You may need to compensate for this angle by pointing your toes and knees out a little more to provide more clearance between the thighs for the belly in the start position. The snatch, upon superficial inspection, looks like it is accomplished by using the arms to lift the bar overhead. Perhaps the wide grip fools the uninformed eye. The clean seems easier to understand as a pull, but the movement must be appreciated as a jump with a barbell in the hands, followed by a catch overhead, made possible by a drop into position that straightens out the arms. The bar is not lifted into place with the arms, and it is not swung into place through an arc-shaped bar path. The jump carries the bar up in an essentially straight vertical line. If it is done efficiently, just like every other barbell exercise performed while standing on the floor. The power snatch, frequently the hang version done from what we call the jumping position, is a favorite exercise of post-high school strength coaches because it's a long movement, it requires some athletic ability, and it's explosive. In fact, the highest power outputs ever recorded in human movement are generated at the second pull position of the snatch. It can be done by bigger guys who can't rack a clean, and it's no more difficult to learn than a power clean. And if you know how to do it already, you'll impress the right people in the college weight room. But it is done with lighter weights, so it doesn't have the potential to cause the same level of adaptation as the power clean does. The power snatch is frequently looped. It requires enough shoulder flexibility to make an effective shrug in the lockout position over the shoulders, and its longer bar path provides more time to screw things up. So it presents, perhaps, more technical challenges than does the power clean. The power snatch uses essentially the same teaching method as the power clean, and it takes about the same amount of time to learn. Again, we learn the movement from the top down, perfecting the jump and the catch in the rack position, then tacking the deadlift onto the front of the movement off the floor. So we'll start the same way, with the empty bar in the hands at the top of the pull. This will be the hang position, just as in the clean. The hang position will be the default position for holding the bar between reps while you're learning to perform the movement. Again, a PVC pipe or a broomstick is too light to learn to pull anything with, and you need to have the right equipment if you want to lift weights. Women really should consider the smaller diameter 15-kilo bar if snatching is in the program. Their usually smaller hands have a hard enough time making a grip at the angle at which they meet the bar in a snatch. For men, any 20-kilo bar will do for right now. It is true that Olympic weightlifting bars are better for the snatch and the clean and jerk at heavy weights. But for novices learning the movement, most any bar will work well enough. The snatch grip has been described by many authors as being derived from some percentage of arm length, with measurements taken in the bar marked. Unnecessary complexity. The reality of the situation is that everybody will adjust the grip to a position that works for them, no matter how much precision was used in originally determining the grip. And what works will be determined by where the bar strikes you as you jump. If your grip is too narrow, you lose the advantage of using a wide grip. Duh, right? And if it's too wide, you hit yourself in the hip pointers. So the optimum grip will place the bar somewhere between the anterior superior iliac spine, the ASIS, the hip pointer, and the pubis for everybody. The best way to set the grip is to stand up with the bar and slide your hands out wide, obviously double overhand, to the point near the sleeves where the bar rests against your lower belly, just below your hip pointers and just above your pubis, in your lap. This placement gives you a range of a couple of inches on your belly and about an inch either way at the hands. When in doubt, go wider, since the point is to shorten the bar travel. After setting your grip, refer to the bar markings and spot your position so that you can duplicate the grip width quickly and precisely every time. Go ahead and use the hook grip you learned earlier in the clean. This grip width will result in a rather acutely angled hand position on the bar so that the thumb, index finger, and middle fingers do most of the gripping in the snatch, with little contribution from the ring finger and the little finger. This angle makes the use of the hook grip even more important for the snatch because fewer fingers do most of the work of holding the bar. You already know how to make the hook from doing it for the clean, so you should not have a problem adding it at first now. Chalk is important, too, and any gym that lets you snatch shouldn't have too big a problem with a little judiciously applied magnesium carbonate. Once your grip is set, note the position of the bar against your belly. It should be in contact with the skin when you are standing erect in the hang position. With chest up, elbows straight and internally rotated like in the clean, knees and hips extended and eyes looking forward and slightly down at the same point 15 feet away on the floor. Your stance right now will be the standard pulling stance used for the clean and the deadlift. Heels 8 to 12 inches apart and toes pointed slightly out. We'll modify the stance a little later. The internally rotated elbows are important here. They're your reminder to keep your arms perfectly straight during the pull. When you set your grip, set your arms into position by rotating them the way you would if you were standing with your palms facing the floor and then pointing your thumbs down at the ground. Later, when you rack the bar at the top, the racking motion will involve rotating the arms externally in the opposite direction. This rotation provides much of the snap that is characteristic of racking a snatch. The next position is the rack position. The snatch racks overhead, just like the top position of the press, but with a wider grip. The bar is in balance when it is directly over the shoulder joints, since that is the point at which no moment arm exists between the load and the point of rotation. The rack position has nothing to do with your head or your neck, especially considering the fact that your neck can move around quite a bit under the racked bar. In this position, the bar, the shoulder, and the midfoot will be vertically aligned, something that is very important when the weight gets heavy. Get the bar in position over your head with your snatch grip any way you have to, and don't let go of your hook. Your arms must be perfectly straight. They will go from internally rotated in the hang position to externally rotated overhead. If you point the palms of your hands directly at the ceiling, you will produce this position. Holding onto the hook prevents the bar from rolling back into the fingers to make a long moment arm between the bar and the wrists. Some leverage is inevitable, but the hook keeps it from getting excessive. After the bar is in position overhead, make sure it's in balance over the shoulder joints. Push the bar back a little to feel the posterior extent of your balance. Then bring it forward until you feel the weight start to pull the bar forward. The balance point is right in the middle, where the rotation force on the shoulders feels neutral. For most people, this position will be a little behind where they think it should be, especially if they've been told to keep the bar over the top of their head. During this process, the elbows remain perfectly straight. Once the balance point has been identified, the final part of the rack position is added. Shrug your shoulders up like you're reaching for the ceiling with the palms of your hands. Shrugging the traps in the rack position recognizes their anatomical role as the main supporters of the scapulas, and thus the bar. Think of it as though the delts and the triceps are holding the arm straight and the traps are holding up the bar, because they are. The shrug also allows the rack position to be met with a solid base of upper body support. Instead of just holding up the bar with your arms, you'll be supporting it with the strongest muscles in your upper back. Remember that your palms are pointing at the ceiling. Your elbows are perfectly straight, and your eyes are looking forward and slightly down. Lowering the bar from the rack position correctly at first is an important way to teach yourself more about the bar path and the snatch, starting from the very beginning. Just like we did in the clean, we'll start practicing a close vertical bar path from the very beginning, preparing early for what comes later. Barbells are in balance when they are directly over the midfoot. So when you lower the bar from the rack position, keep it there. Unlock your wrists first and let the bar fall straight down past your face and chest, and then catch it in the hang position. The wrists were the last things to extend on the way up, and they will be the first things to unlock as you drop the bar back down. As it falls straight down in balance over the midfoot, even with the light weight of the empty bar, you begin to process the learning that arms do not power the snatch. They don't lower the bar either. The bar falls and you catch it. Don't try to slow it down with your rowing muscles, but rather just cushion the fall with bent knees and hips. Aim for your nose the first couple of times to learn how close the bar can actually be on the way down. Make it touch your shirt after it falls past your face, not by slowing the bar down with your arms, but by keeping it close from the top as it falls down. It helps here to actually think about the midfoot and the slot directly over it in the air that you drop the bar into. You will still have your hook grip, so you won't lose the bar as it hits the hang position. Practice this a few times. The next position is the jumping position. Just like the clean again, but with one important difference. In the clean, the bar leaves the thighs at this last point of contact, somewhere in the mid-thigh, where the hips and knees have unlocked. The bar is touching the skin, and your elbows are straight. The jumping position is both knees-hips unlock position and the point on the thigh where this occurs. In the snatch, the jumping position is just the knees and hips unlocked position, because the bar will slide up to touch the belly with straight elbows before it leaves the body. The jumping position for the snatch is the belly, the same as its hang position, not the thigh like the clean. Unlock your knees and hips just like you do for a vertical jump or a standing broad jump. As you do this, slide the bar down the thighs, never letting it leave contact with the skin, with your elbows straight. It is common to bend mostly the knees here, which will leave the shoulders behind the bar. The involvement of both hips and knees in the jump is critical, since two joints extending explosively generate more power than just one. If both joints are unlocked, the shoulders will end up directly over the bar, with it this far up the thighs. The shoulders go forward of the bar into the standard pulling position when the bar gets lower. The elbows are still straight and internally rotated, eyes are looking forward and slightly down, and feet are in the pulling stance. From this position of contact on the thighs, slide the bar up to the belly and jump as high as possible. This should be a smooth motion that accelerates as the bar slides up. Before it leaves the body on the way up, the bar touches the same place on the belly that it did in the hang position. As you leave the ground, make sure your elbows are straight and that you're jumping as high as you can. High enough that you have to fully extend the knees and the hips to do it. A good jump will leave the toes pointed at the floor, not because you performed a calf raise as part of the explosion, but because the explosive extension carried you up onto your toes. This knee and hip extension is what makes the bar touch your belly, so make sure the touch occurs. Don't worry about the elbows the first few times. Just jump high with straight elbows. When your jump with straight elbows is working, jump and catch the bar in the rack position. Keep the bar close to your chest on the way up, and let the elbows bend after the jump to facilitate this. If you bend your elbows before the jump, you will dilute the power being transmitted down the arms to the bar. Remember towing the car with a chain versus a spring? And the tight biceps will slow down the rotation that must occur to rack the bar. If you try to keep the elbows straight after the jump, the bar will swing away forward into a loop. So you must eventually bend your elbows along with your wrists, but not until after you jump. If you just think about catching the bar in the rack position, your elbows and wrists will perform in the correct order. The elbows snap from internal rotation into external rotation as the elbows and wrists unlock after the jump, and then relock in the rack. This unlocking after the jump permits the bar to fly up past the chest and the face, staying close to vertical over the midfoot. The unlocking of the two joints allows the arms to behave like the links in a chain that connects the shoulders to the bar. The jump provides the power that elevates the bar and propels it up with enough momentum to carry it through the unpowered part of the pull to the rack position. The arms merely connect the back to the bar to transmit this power. They generate none of the pull on their own. The final part of the snatch is the drop that straightens out the wrists and elbows at the top. As you feel yourself rise to your toes as a consequence of the jump, and the bar flies up past your chest and face, drop under the bar. This drop is a bending of the knees and hips again, perhaps back to the same position from which you jumped. This time they just unlock to permit you to catch the bar with straight elbows in a cushioned position. It is the drop that finally straightens the elbows and the wrists as your hips and back move down, not your muscles pulling the bar up into this final position. This would be an assistance exercise for the snatch that's known as the muscle snatch. It's not particularly useful. The drop provides the final snap that permits the external rotation of the arms into the rack position. And the speed of the last 10% of the snatch depends on your commitment to drop under the bar and catch it with straight arms. The movement should be fast enough to cause the bar to audibly rattle as you rack it. Make it slam into a position as you drop. To make the movement quick and sharp, you might want to think about stabbing your hands up into the bar as you drop. Practice this a few times, and then set the bar down to rest your hands. They will be tired by now. Be aware of the fact that dropping under the bar from the top of the pull is going to involve a more horizontal back angle. Like in the squat, get the idea out of your head that a vertical back is somehow the proper thing to do. If you're dropping under the bar to straighten out your elbows and your wrists, you're going to have to do it by dropping into a position where the back is more horizontal than it was at the top of the pull. This should be obvious. As you recover from the snatch, you'll stand up to a straight vertical back position, but you can't catch the bar if you don't make a horizontal back movement happen by dropping under it. Don't try to rack the bar with a straight vertical back. Remember to lower the bar by unlocking your wrist first and catching the bar as it falls past your chest. You do not unpress a snatch any more than you use a press to raise the bar into the rack position. If you have pressed it into position, then the wrists have extended before the elbows. The jump was not the force that carried the bar up. The drop is not explosively rotated and straightened the elbows and wrists, and the movement has been very slow. Many people have been allowed to raise the bar the final few inches with the wrists already turned over, and their mental picture of the movement is consequently quite incorrect. And it won't matter how fast you can do it wrong. If you lose the last piece of jumping explosion by trying to turn the bar over early to press it with a snatch grip, you lose the power from the last part of the jump, and you lose the speed from the drop because you didn't do the drop. Unlocking the wrists first to lower the bar from the beginning stops this problem before it starts. Once you're catching the bar in the rack position with a drop and a snap of the elbows and wrists, you're doing the basic snatch movement. The next part will involve getting the bar from the floor up to the jumping position. And again, the deadlift is the most efficient physical model of a pull from the floor. Start at the top. From the hang position, slide the bar down into the jumping position. slide it up as you jump and catch it in the rack position a couple of times, making sure to hit yourself in the belly and to drop. Then slide the bar down to the position just below the kneecaps, like you did for the clean, below the joints, but not much below the very top of your shins. Slide the bar up slowly until it reaches the mid-thighs, then begin the acceleration of it up and into a jump, making sure to touch the belly and to keep straight elbows when you jump. Do not stop at the mid-thigh position. Treat it like a trigger for the acceleration, just as you do in a clean, so there's no pause in the pull. Rack the bar. Unrack it wrists first, drop it down, and repeat the snatch from this position a couple of times. Set the bar down if you need to between these steps. Again, the snatch can be hard on the hands and you will be getting tired. The mistake you're going to make here will be letting the bar lose contact with the thigh.